hello and welcome back to another episode of Minority Report's podcast and digital series. I am your host, Mona Shake, you guys. TGIF. Thank God it's Friday. It has been a bit of a long week for me. I don't know about you guys, but it's been a lot going on this week. Just been keeping busy, but very excited that it's Friday. I don't know what the sky looks like for you. If you're in the North California, Northern California region, there's all these fires going on. The sky is orange. The sun is orange, just like our president. And in Los Angeles, the air quality went from bad to worse because of the residue that we're getting. It's really bad. The entire sky is orange in Los Angeles. The sun is orange. It's just not attractive. But that did not stop me today from going and getting my pink berry and sitting outside and consuming that whole thing by myself. I wasn't going to let bad air quality of Los Angeles going to stop me, because the fat girl in me needed to be fed. And I did feed her that pink berry that she wanted. So I did, because damn it, I wanted it. So here we are. It's Friday. I'm glad it's Friday. Every time I look out, it just looks apocalyptic, as if the world is coming to an end. I mean, 2020 has been that year where the wackiest stuff would go down, and you're like, that makes sense. It's 2020. You're like, if somebody was just like, you know, I saw an alien jogging on my street, I'd be like, no, that makes sense. It's 2020. Or somebody said, you know what, I had a baby, and my baby talks to me, I'd be like, that makes total sense. It's 2020. Like, that's how whacked out 2020 is. But enough about the wackiness of 2020. I am going to be inviting over, going to be bringing over our very funny, very talented comedian friend who has been on my shows a few times. She's really fantastic. So I'm very, very excited to bring her on. I'm just waiting to bring her on now. But while we're waiting for her to, while we're waiting for her to join, I wanted to talk to you guys about how, James said, haha, good for you. Should be an enlightened chat tonight. Yes, I'm very excited. Our guests tonight is going to be a Latina comedian who has overcome a lot of adversity. I've admired her. I've seen her grow as a comic, as a person. She's really fantastic. And I'm pretty excited about her. So so what are you guys going out for the weekend? I want to hear what you guys are up for the weekend. I am probably just going to relax and try to get some work done, is what I'm going to do. But I feel like Monday through almost Thursday, all I do is talk about Trump, because he just, even if I want to avoid him, I can't, because he just keeps doing and saying whacked out stuff that you're just like, oh my God, how could I possibly not cover this when the democracy of this country is at stake, when our freedom is at stake? You know what? I believe what Trump's presidency has done is really make us value our freedom more, not take our freedom for granted. It has really kind of put a lot of things in perspective for people, where they're like, you know what, I really need to take this serious. I need to go out and vote. I really need to know what the hell is going on. But enough about Trump. We're not going to talk about Trump today. We're going to talk about my very special guest today. She's a stand-up comic. She's an actor. She's a writer. She participated in CBS's 2020 Diversity Sketch Comedy Showcase. She has credits on ABC's Jimmy Kimmel Live, MTV's Decoded, NBC Stand Up, A Little Late with Lily Singh, and she has an upcoming show on Netflix. So let's just say she's all that. My very talented friend, Danielle Perez. Danielle, how are you, my friend?
Hey, so good to see you. Thank you for having me.
So great to see you. Look at you with your little disco background. I feel like I need to up my game, girl.
I mean, your eyeshadow is popping. Your eyeshadow, I'm like, oh my gosh, I did not bring the glam. You brought the glam. Listen, I'm the glam background.
Yeah, you got the glam in the background. I got the glam on my eyes. That's what we're doing. Danielle, how are you doing, my friend?
You know, I mean, better, but there's toxic ash outside in Los Angeles. So.
Yeah. That's exactly what I was telling you,
I guess, considering that.
I was thinking that it's bad enough that our president is orange. Now our sky and our sun has to be orange, too. It's just not fair.
Yeah, we should really see who funded that gender reveal party. see if someone in the Oval Office exchanged some money for that, because the orange on orange, that branding is pretty strong.
Holy guacamole, dude. That gender, I mean, did they catch the people? Did they persecute the people who did the gender reveal party?
I don't know, but I mean, I want them to be fully persecuted. But the thing is, it's like, you know that these people can't afford to pay whatever judgment is levied against them. It's like, what are they going to do? Just like garnish their wages for like eternity?
Pretty much. That baby's going to be, they're going to put the baby to work. It's going to be like 6 months old. And the
baby, they should just take that baby away. That baby should be put up for adoption. It's not just out the womb, straight up. Just
damn, Danielle, that's tough love right there.
I mean, it's just so unnecessary. Have you been to a gender reveal party?
No, I refuse to.
Yeah, like, what is the, there's a baby shower. That's it. You know what I mean? I don't know why you need more parties. Right. For a baby that's going to get a party literally every year.
Right. What? But I don't understand what the big deal is about the gender reveal. I don't understand that.
I so don't get that. And it's so wild because I feel like gender reveal parties are a very like white people thing, you know, like a white people thing.
They're not. It's everybody, actually.
I guess it's everyone, but it's like, I know, you know, like my family is like from the Dominican Republic. So it's like, you know, definitely like the boy, everyone wants a boy and the boy carries on the family name. And it's like the boy's the king of the house and all that shit. But it's like, we never had gender reveal parties. You know what I mean? It was just like, oh, a boy, we're happy. Oh, a girl, get to work. You know?
Right. Did you ever see the movie The Dictator with Sacha Baron Cohen? Did you?
I never saw it. Mm-mm.
It is so funny. There's this one scene where Megan Fox plays one of his lovers, the dictator. He's a Middle Eastern dictator. And she's like, I'm pregnant. He's like, so are you going to have a boy or an abortion?
That's funny.
I was roaring with laughter when I heard that. I was like, oh my God. I was like, is that what the gender reveal parties are about?
Maybe that's it. They got a doctor, an OBGYN standing on call just in case anything turns out pink.
Everybody's got the face mask already. They're ready to go.
They're ready to go, yeah.
Oh my God. It's so ridiculous. But I mean, look, you're a stand-up comic. I'm a stand-up comic. We have all everybody's taken a hit. But like for us, our art form has really taken a hit. Like we can't go to clubs anymore. We can't tour anymore. Not for now. Not for a while. We're not going to be
able to. I mean, I just like I have asthma. I'm a high-risk bitch. You know, I can't justify putting myself at risk for stage time. And then also other people, you know what I mean? Because from what I've seen, just a lot of places aren't doing this very safely. You know what I mean? It just doesn't seem like it's at a point where it feels very safe. And I don't want to be responsible because I just know people who's have lost family and loved ones. Do COVID, you know what I mean? I don't want to, because they came and saw comedy. Like, I'm sorry, I'm funny, but I'm not that funny. You know what I mean? Like, it's not worth it to me. And I know there's a part of me that also feels like people that are kind of going to comedy shows right now, it's a little bit of this like, you know, Trump's my president and, you know, I'm not going to wear a mask because I believe in freedom. And it's like, is that the kind of, best they're just like idiots that don't really like get coronavirus, and at worst they're like making a political statement by like coming to my show, and it's like I don't know if I want to perform for people like that right now.
Sure. For sure. I would think that like the outdoor shows that are taking place are probably gonna ask people to wear the mask or get out. Like, it's, you know, because they have the right to refuse service, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's just, I feel like anything indoors is...
Only outdoors.
And even outdoors, you know what I mean? It's like people, I just know people who like work in restaurants that now they're doing al fresco dining. And like these patrons are just, you know, my friend had a patron come to her restaurant, leave a negative Yelp review because he wanted to dine with seven people. And it's like the maximum is six. Like he's just acting like coronavirus isn't a thing. You know what I mean? No mask. Just yelling at her, you know what I mean? But people just are, the thing is, it's like, if people like respected the rules that were in place, yeah, fine. But it just feels like so many people are just acting like, well, it doesn't really apply to me. You know what I mean? Like, but I'm safe. And it's like, but you're not. And right. No one is. And that's why we have these rules.
Right.
I just don't know. I mean, I'm sure there's some places that are doing it super safe.
Yeah.
And like, I would love to encourage them to keep doing that. But I just... I don't super trust it yet.
I feel like Americans are such entitled assholes that, yeah, you know, around the world, like in Europe, you know, in New Zealand and Australia, also their leaderships are wonderful. But you know, that being said, like, even though, like, the people, you know, look, there was a big protest, a march in Berlin where, you know, these are Germans that, you know, for the most part, Germans have been very good about, like, following the rules, social distancing. Like, Angela Merkel has been very, very strict about them. But then these neo-Nazis, these far-right extremists, these nut jobs, they took it to the streets. They were in Berlin. They were protesting and they were saying, you know, we're not going to wear masks. And everybody told them to basically shut the fuck up and go home. They were like, shut the fuck up. Like, seriously. We're trying to defeat this pandemic. Like, please go home. Like, nobody needs this shit. Like, seriously, go back, go home, eat your bad food, wear your awful clothes, just go.
But out here, it's like freedom of press, and we have freedom and two sides to every story and alternative facts. I mean, it's so crazy that this idea of like, well, you have to hear all sides. It's like one side is bigoted. One side is blatantly racist. One side is denying science and fact. Like, how are we giving that any sort of credence? Like, it's like an actual alternative.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if you heard some of the clips that have went viral about Trump talking to Bob Woodward, talking about downplaying the whole COVID thing. And I don't want to send people in panic. Do you want people in panic or do you want them caskets? Because I'd rather have people in panic and not caskets, right? So there's over, 161,000 people that have died already.
We're over, like, 190 at this point.
At 190, yeah. It's gotten really, really up. I mean
like, what's the number? What's the magic number that, like, you know, I'm so over even just, like, Democrat versus Republican. Like, what's the number that Congress is going to, like, fucking get it together and be like, this is unacceptable. This is the country that we were sworn to protect. Take care of.
Yes.
Sir. Honestly, I'm going to, like, do something about it.
Honestly, Danielle, I frankly don't think either side, Republicans or Democrats for that matter, I don't think there is a number for them. You know, you remember when the kids got shot in Connecticut, mm-hmm, you know, and those kids, yeah, died, and it, yeah, was, and that, mm-hmm, was at the Obama administration, right? Yeah. And I remember saying to myself that if we don't have like proper gun laws put in because of this, we will never do it, right? Yeah. I mean, you're talking about two-year-olds dying at gunpoint, right? Multiple bullets in their bodies, right? If that doesn't shake up a nation and wake up our politicians and wake us up, nothing will. And I feel like these deaths that are happening, you know, before they were like, oh, you know, even Trump, you know, when he's talking about Woodward, he says it. He's like, well, it's not just old people, you know, it's happening to young people too. You motherfucker, you knew this. You knew that all these people were going to die and then you just let it run. And not just that, not only did you want to tell people because you don't want to go into panic, you were encouraging people not to wear masks. Mm-hmm. This is some crazy, twisted shit, Danielle. This is like a bad episode of Black Mirror.
Oh, totally. I mean, well, I remember when the news articles started coming out about how masks don't really work and you don't really need a mask. And that was like early days of the pandemic. And it was like everything against like my better judgment was like, this is wrong. I'm like, everyone, you go to a hospital, surgeons are wearing masks, doctors wear masks. Like I've been in and out of like emergency rooms and hospitals I'm constantly seen by doctors all the time because of just my medical conditions that I know, I'm like, that's not right. And it's like, instead of just like being honest with the American people, you created this whole like misinformation campaign.
Yep.
To be like, not only is it not a big deal, but masks don't even work. And now we're in this situation where we can't even get people to wear masks because, you know, and it's like, it's wild. The longer I'm in this pandemic, the more I'm like, am I a conspiracy theorist? Like, and I feel crazy, but it's like,
yes,
I'm not. You know what I mean? So much like, yes, we are right to mistrust the government. We are right to question the systems and the way they're working, because the way they're working is not to keep me alive, is not to support the working class. It's to line the pockets of fucking billionaires. Like,
that's right.
Like, he's made like $1 billion in the pandemic or some shit.
You talking about Bezos?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Bezos is now worth $200 billion. He's going to be the first trillionaire. He is now the most richest person that's ever lived. And by the way, he gave away.
Today is 9/11, and 9/11 first responders don't have access to medical care.
That's correct.
You know, okay, but Jeff Bezos is going to be a trillionaire.
Listen, he's going to be a trillionaire. He doesn't pay his fair share of taxes. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's funny because I was thinking about that. I was like, man, you know, Amazon Prime has so many shows that they're putting out. You know, and as comics, you know, our thing is that we're always observing. We're always trying to tell the truth, always trying to at least present, you know, be honest about whatever is happening. And, you know, you really think about something like that and you're just like, this man is not paying his fair share of taxes. But then as a comic, what do I do? Do I like just kind of keep my mouth shut because tomorrow I might get a gig on Amazon Prime and I have to like shut my mouth? Or do I tell the fucking truth? Like, this is bullshit.
You tell the fucking truth. I mean, this is just such bullshit.
I mean, we are just like in this strange topsy-turvy world. I don't know if you heard about this news that just came out 2 days ago about how Iran, Russia, and China have cyber attacks that they're doing to sabotage and undermine the election process. I mean, in the U.S., yeah.
Great.
We're the fucking, we no longer have the standing of the world power like the way we used to. We just don't have that anymore. It's gone. It really is diminished.
Remember the 80s?
Remember the 80s, yeah. You know, I wasn't in America in the 80s.
I was born in the 80s.
Yeah, I was in America in the 80s. And I was a baby, so, you know, I don't even... So I was in Pakistan. I didn't move till I was, like, in the mid to late 90s. It's not until when I moved here. But it's one of our watch viewers is saying, James is saying, 192,000 and growing. Remember, we still haven't got the Labor Day bump yet. I'm terrified, man. I mean, look, we're easily we're going to hit at least 250K before the year is up.
Yeah. Minimum. It's just so sad.
Minimum.
And then I'm just, you know, already thinking about, okay, so when we do get a vaccine, right, they're working really hard to fast track this, then how many anti-vaxxers aren't going to want to vaccinate themselves?
Right. I'm thinking the same thing.
Kids.
Yep. I mean, look, we're not going to have...
In Los Angeles, it's like, I mean, so many anti-vaxxer nut jobs out here.
Let's not forget Jenny McCarthy is one of them. So
she's on what? The Masked Singer, the number one show in America. Great job. What's that about being canceled? Cancel culture? Is it real? I don't know.
Cancel culture is very interesting in the sense that some people end up getting spared for their shitty things and some people don't, you know?
It's not real. Cancel culture is not real. Give me one person who's been canceled that is truly out of a job.
You know, Ellen DeGeneres, you know, they were going after her because of the whole...
She's still got a job. She's still owning the Ellen show. She's still making money.
Yeah, she's doing just
that. She has a house in Malibu.
Yeah.
And a compound out by Santa Barbara. That's not canceled.
Listen, she even if she doesn't even if she stops working today, Danielle, she has so much money. What
exactly?
What does it matter? What does it matter? You know, it's freaking ridiculous. So now I was very impressed by the fact that you have a Wikipedia, and I was like, I don't even have a Wikipedia, and Danielle's like really moving up in the world. So
my God, that's so kind. No, actually, there was a campaign there. Oh my gosh, and I feel so terrible. I can't remember the name of it, but there's this group, and they work to kind of like build like history, like women's history. So they created a bunch of Wikipedia pages for like scientists and doctors, like female scientists and doctors, but then they started branching out in entertainment. So they started building Wikipedia pages for female stand-ups. So they built one. And I was like, oh my God, that's so nice of you.
That's so amazing. I've been looking to build out my Wikipedia page, and I was just like, is that too cocky?
No, tell your followers, tell YouTube Live. Mona needs a Wikipedia page. Let's get her one.
Yeah, I'm thinking about getting
one. I'm not a nerd. I'm not a scientist, but literally probably is, so do it.
I am definitely not a scientist, Danielle. I mean, you actually went to college. I am a college
out. So. I was kicked out. I was asked to leave San Francisco State. I didn't graduate.
Do tell. What happened?
When you go to college and then you don't go to class and instead just do a bunch of drugs and fuck and ruin, they will ask you very kindly not to return.
Is it via email or in person?
It was, well, you know, I'm like on the cusp of millennial Gen Z, so I got like a letter in the mail.
Really?
Yeah, but up until then, like, I was sending my parents like falsified transcripts so that I could get like a good student driver discount on my driver's insurance.
Yeah.
So I would like take the printout of my transcript and then like go to a like copy machine and like take white out and like, you know, cut it and piece it together.
You were fucking the report.
Yeah, to get the driver discount.
Hilarious. Did you get it?
I did.
So wait, how many years were you in school before you got kicked out?
Oof, like a year and a half. Not very long.
What were you going to school for?
Accounting. Yeah. I mean, right. Like, I was good at math. I had no idea what I wanted to like be when I went to college. Yeah. But my dad's like, you're good at math. Be an accounting major. And it's like, accounting actually has nothing to do with math. That's a fun fact about accounting. Just putting things in piles, which even more boring than math.
Sure. Accounting, like, to become what? Like a CPA?
I guess. Yeah. I mean, I just had no interest in school. I had no idea what I wanted to do or be. I went to San Francisco State because it was the farthest away from Los Angeles, like the school, the farthest away that I got into.
Because that is because you were born and raised in L.A. And you were like, this is the far. No, you could have went to New York.
But I didn't get to a school in New York.
Got it.
The reason I got into San Francisco State is because if you, like, my grades were really bad in high school. I was like about a C student, but my test scores were really good. So if your if your grades are bad, they have like a minimum test score you need to get. And I like far exceeded it. So I was like accepted into the Cal State system.
So you have bad grades, but you test really well?
Because I would do well on tests, but I just wouldn't turn in my homework. I'm lazy.
Hilarious.
Smart, lazy girls, you know? Yeah. Not at all.
Listen, smart, lazy is a very interesting phenomenon to me. You know what it is? I don't think there is any such thing as lazy. I think it's people doing things that they're not interested in, you know? And their intelligence is not, you know, it's like that saying by Einstein. It's like if a fish, you know, tries to climb a tree all its life, it's going to think it's stupid. Or, you know, and it's just like, yeah, because that's not your
special. It's not meant to do that. Yeah.
It's not meant to do that. A fish is meant to, you know, swim, and a bird is meant to sit in friggin' trees, or, you know, squirrels meant to climb a tree. That's why.
So that's a good quote. I've never heard that quote before.
Yeah. I mean, but, you know, look, I'm sure you're a stand-up comic, you're an actor, you're a writer, you're a producer. It's a lot of friggin' work. I bet you're not lazy on that.
No, definitely not. I mean, that's my dad. My dad's like, Danielle, you're only lazy when you want to be. Stuff that you actually care about, oh, it gets done. I'm like, it does.
Precisely. So it's just about, like, you know, your motivation comes from a place where things you're passionate about.
Yeah.
You're like, if I'm not passionate about it, I'm not doing it. Like, who cares? You know, I was a good student, but Jesus, I did not want to go to college. That was just not my thing. We were these poor immigrant kids, you know. I moved at 15 from Pakistan, and you know, we were just like so poor. We lived next to the projects in Jersey City. We went to a high school. I scored really good, but I just did not want to go to college. I wanted to be, you know, a stage actor. I wanted to be a performer, and that's what I ended up doing.
That's so amazing that you knew from such a young age that that's what you wanted to do. And you were like, no one's going to stop me. Like, this is legit what I want to do.
Yeah. I knew that when I was
really little, I wanted to like be an actor and stuff, but
yeah,
it was like,
when you were little, you knew that?
When I was little, I really wanted to, but then it was like the thing of like, I never got cast in like the play. Like, I was always like chorus in the background. You know what I mean? I was never like the girl that was the lead or anything like that. And I don't know if that was like racism or like whatever, you know, and then also like growing up in LA, like I knew people that were kind of like child actors, and my sister went to like an arts high school. And so it was like, there were performing artists there and stuff. And so it was like, well, if you're really going to be an actor, like you would already be doing it. So I guess, you know, do acting. I don't know.
Well, now, Danielle, you're first generation. Are your parents from Dominican Republic and then mm-hmm. born and raised here?
My parents are from DR and they immigrated when they were children to the US.
Okay. But but you're first generation because they were immigrants. So I'm an immigrant. You know, if I one day have children, they would be first generation. So it's kind of like that. But did you have, like, immigrant parents have this thing, and I don't know if your parents had that, where, you know, it's like you come to America to have a better life for yourself, to give your children a better life. And, you know, there's also this expectation that a lot of immigrant parents have. It's like, you are going to go to a good college, you're going to get good education, you're going to make good money, because it's all about security. It's all about making money. It's about never going back to poverty or never struggling. Did your parents kind of instill that in you as a child? Like, you are going to go to college. You are going to do this job.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there was like no question about if I was going to go to college or not. And so that was the thing of like, I knew I was going to college. I just had no idea what I was going to do. Mm-hmm. Like, I had also gone in my head, I was like, I'll be an attorney. I'll be a prosecuting attorney, send the bad guys to jail. And then my mom would just always tell me, she's like, you know, a lot of plumbers make more than an attorney. And it's like, what does that mean? So you don't want me to go to law school? It was like so insane. I think she just wanted me to be like an engineer. Like like my mom wanted me to be an engineer. My dad wanted to be an accountant because they're like, you know math. You know how to turn on the computer. And I'm like, I'm not a rocket scientist. Just because you guys are old and don't know how to use the computer.
I love how your parents are like, you can do math and you can turn the computer on. That's it. You're going to college.
Yeah. They're like, yeah, that's it. That's it. But I mean, so they were just like, you need to have a real job. You need to like be secure. But then like, so in San Francisco, I got kicked out, but then I also got like run over by like the Muni streetcar, like the subway train. So then I came back to LA and didn't have feet. And they were like, maybe let's ease off Danielle. You know?
Lost that like casual. Yeah, I lost my feet. No problem. Anyway,
we're like, you know what? Take some time to figure it out, Danielle.
My goodness, Danielle. You know, I've known you for a while, but I never had the courage to ask you because I just didn't know how to. Because I was just like, God, I can't ask her that. That's so harsh. I could never just ask her. I'll just let her tell the story. One day I'll overhear a story and be like, oh, okay. The reason being, Danielle, you know, and one of the reasons why I've always loved and adored you and respected you so much, you know, we know, look, being a stand-up comic, being especially a female stand-up comic, and on top of that, a woman of color is challenging enough, right? And then you add that, you know, that kind of physical challenge to that, and you're just like, Jesus Christ, like, how much adversity is this girl dealing with? You know, I don't think you know this about me, but I have four older brothers. I'm the youngest and the only girl after four boys. And my second and my third brother were given expired vaccination in Pakistan because of polio, and they got polio because of it. So two of my brothers have polio in their legs. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so my second brother had polio in both his legs, and my third brother has polio in his left leg. So we grew up around, you know, my brothers getting surgeries and my brother constantly getting, you know, physical therapy. And so I saw what it did to our family. It really destroyed our family that, you know, polio really just, you know, really pulled my parents apart. And I see what it did to our family dynamic. It just really, you know, fucked the whole thing up. So, you know, but in your situation, that wasn't the case. You didn't get polio. You were, you know, you were in San Francisco and you're 20 years old and you're what, crossing the road and the trolley runs you over?
Yeah. So in San Francisco, the Muni, it goes above ground and below ground. So it's like a subway train, basically. Like it's a light rail system. Uh-huh. So it's not like the trolley one. It's like the light, you know, like out here in LA, there's like the metro, like the red line, gold line and all that. Mm-hmm. So it runs with traffic. So I was crossing the street to catch it in the middle of the street, took the light, ran me over. They had to lift it off me. No legs. I mean, I'm really, you know, lucky that truly the only major thing that happened, it's like, I don't have feet. Like, I don't have any mental, you know, neurological damage. Mm-hmm. You know, my back is fine. I have like, you know, complete faculties of like my body. I don't have to use a catheter or anything like that. But
yeah.
But I mean, it was like really hard for like my friends and family. For sure.
I can't even imagine. I mean, I just can't even imagine. So you're 20 years old, and so you had the light to what? Cross the street?
Mm-hmm.
To go catch it. So you cross the street.
Yeah, so I'm crossing it, and in the middle of the street, it like basically he took the light because there was like a homeless person at the stop that had been apparently a problem before. And so he like didn't want to deal with it. So he just like took it. Like the driver didn't even know he hit me straight up. The people on the train were like, you hit her, stop, stop. Mm.
So you're under the Muni.
Yeah. Yeah, they had to lift the train off my legs, yeah.
Are you awake? Are you passed out? Like what?
I was out. So basically, like, I'm crossing the street. Like, I know it's coming because I'm crossing the street to catch it. Mm-hmm. And I, like, turned my head to see it. And it was like a movie where all of a sudden it, like, sped up really quickly, you know, just like zoom. And then I'm out. And then the next thing I remember is, like, you know, police officer, firefighter being like next to me, asking me questions like, what's your name? Do you know what day it is? Like, when's your birthday? Do you have like, you know, your parents' phone numbers and things like that? So like, I was pretty lucid. Like the first words out of my mouth were like, hi, I'm Danielle Perez. Nice to meet you. High as fuck. Just high as fuck on adrenaline. Just like it kicked in and I was like, gone.
Shit.
Yeah. But I like gave them like my mom's work number and her cell and my dad's home office and like cell, and I told her like what order to call my parents in. And then they started asking if I could feel different parts of my body. And then once they got to my legs, I was like starting to panic a little bit because I couldn't feel them. And they were like, calm down, calm down. And then they got me in like a gurney and in like a little ambulance. They shut the door. And once they shut the door, I was like, okay, I'm done. Like they got me, like kind of my job to try to like keep it together is done. Like at this point, it's not up to me. So they kept me under for 2 days and then I woke up and literally the first like words I hear waking up, it's like my mom is like petting my hair. She's like with me in the hospital and she's like, Danielle, you don't have feet. And it's like, oh, I mean, I figured I couldn't feel them.
That's out of her mouth. You don't have feet.
The first words out of her mouth. I know my mom, my Miss Maria Perez, just she went.
Girl, no.
No tact, no grace.
That is like your standard immigrant parents, dude. That's your immigrant parents right there. No, like no subtlety. Subtlety is just not their strongest suit, is it? No, like, hey, how are you feeling? Like, no, like, hey, you don't have feet. Anyways, so how are you feeling? It's like, wait, what the fuck now?
I like took that in and was like, I gotta go back to sleep. Oh, I gotta be out again.
Danielle, that is, I mean, you know, I love that about you, the fact that you have such a jovial and like such a great kind of perspective on it, and how you're just, you've dealt with something so absolutely traumatic. My goodness.
I mean, you know, like everyone has trauma, right? Like we're living through a collective trauma that is this pandemic, you know? I mean, my shit is physical, but there was also shit that wasn't physical before that. You know what I mean? And like, I think we can all be a little kinder to each other, you know, as someone who loves to just, you know, be an asshole, like we can all be a little kinder to people and their stuff.
That's what we do, right? That being a comic just kind of gives you that license to be like, I can be an asshole. It's fine.
I can take it. Yeah.
It's fine. But dude, that is, so you wake up and then you're like, you're bawling your eyes out. You're in shock.
No, I was just like really high on pain meds. Like I was just like on pain meds because I was like in the ICU for so long. Basically when the train hit me, my pelvis shattered. And so it ruptured my bladder. And so they had to open me up from like the top of my sternum all the way down to like my vag and like just like check all of my organs, repair my bladder, like they put stents in, like the fact that I don't use a catheter, huge, you know? But so it was like all this like major kind of internal surgery and like the legs are kind of like secondary compared to that. But I was just like under for so long. And so I was like in the ICU, I want to say for about a week. And then I was like in regular hospital and they were basically just like getting me stable enough to like do, like they, basically the way the train like ran me over, there wasn't enough tissue on my, like, below my knee to create, like, a really secure, like, stump. Like, when they amputate you, it's, like, you have those two major bones in your legs, like, the tibia and fibula, and, like, you need tissue around it to wear prosthetics, you know what I mean? Like, you need just, like, that security of, like, your muscle, but there wasn't really enough, so they wanted to amputate me above the knee, but then if you amputate above the knee, it's, like, less stable with prosthetics. And so they were going back and forth with my parents and they were like, she's young, she's healthy. Let's do below the knee, but let's do skin grafts. So they like basically shaved off skin from my thighs to graft onto the bottom of like my stump to close it up. So it's like, I was just a big old open ass wound. I was, you know what I mean? It's like, I had this big old scar from like all over my belly, my abdomen, the thighs were all like shaved off the bottom of my, I was just like in a bed, like high as fuck, like,
Oh my God. I'm trying to like keep it together, Danielle, as I'm listening to you. Cause it's just, I mean, That's a lot of trauma. Have you been to therapy for this? Are you in therapy for this?
Girl, well, I'm in therapy now. I really wanted to act like I'm fine, whatever. They tried to come in. They had this prosthetist come in and try to talk to me about like post, you know, life after the hospital. And my friends and family were in the room and I was like, hold up. I was like, can I be taller and can I wear heels? And they were like, yes. And I was like, okay, then we have nothing to discuss. And it's like, well, clearly I still use a wheelchair. So there have been more things that we need to discuss. Yes.
But, have you ever considered getting prosthetic legs?
Yeah. So I tried really hard after the surgery, after I came back to Los Angeles to try to do prosthetics. The thing is, because of the skin grafts, like my tibia and fibula are really exposed. There's just like not enough muscle down there. Yeah. And like with the technology that we have and like what is like affordable, like it's like I tried really hard to get prosthetics that fit and it just wasn't working. And basically I was just like popping pain pills, you know, like I had like a standing prescription for like morphine and Vicodin. They were like, here you go. And I was like, okay. And so I'm like trying to use these prosthetics and they hurt. So I'm taking these pain pills, but it's like your body hurts for a reason. I ended up getting staph infections. And so like when you get a staph infection, you have to be in the hospital for like a week. I mean, that's like you're on serious antibiotics. And the thing is, you can't just keep getting staph infections. Like your body will build up a tolerance for antibiotics. For sure. So after the second staph infection, it was like, okay, well, this isn't working. And so I just got very depressed and didn't really wear my prosthetics. I got really fat. So this is it.
Listen, I got fat and I got legs. So that's not even a fucking excuse. You know what I'm saying? That's just a fat bitch inside of me. Like that, it don't fucking.
You know, I had a fat girl inside me the whole time. Didn't even know. I mean, I'm definitely like doing therapy now. Like this pandemic has. I mean, because stand up is gone. Like stand up, like. Yeah. Totally saved my life. Like I love stand up more than anything in the world, and it gave me something to be passionate about, to work at, to find community within, you know, like my whole social life, like my work life, like the way I process things, the way I celebrate things, like that was comedy. And it's been that way for the last 6 years, and now it's gone because of COVID. And so it's like this has just been a really hard time, and I've been having to really like look at things like my accident and my life and really feel those feelings, put words to feelings, you know, not just be strong and bulletproof.
That's right. Listen, 2020 is a year of reckoning. Like everything that we have been stashing away and not wanting to look at, 2020 is the 2020 vision, you know?
Hello, bitch, I'm here.
Exactly. It's like, you don't like it? Here you go. Yeah. Here you go. In your face. Like, yeah. Right there. But that's wonderful. So you just started doing therapy this year?
No, I mean, I've been in and out of therapy for a long time. I actually I started going to therapy when I was really little, when my parents divorced. Okay. They were like, they said, when I was in kindergarten, they were like, draw a picture of your family. And I drew like a really big princess that was me. And then like my mom and dad and my sister that were small. And they were like, she's fine. But this is like the first year that I really started like doing kind of more like intense, like trauma therapy, you know what I mean? Like really like reparenting work. I'm on Lexapro now. I found an antidepressant that works for me. Uh-huh. I've never done like antidepressants like as an adult. So yeah, that journey was really scary and tough, but I think just really kind of beyond like the superficial talk therapy, not that that is superficial, but it's not like, how was your day today? It's like, I'm in a pandemic. Like I'm not doing shit. You know what I mean? It's like, let's get down into like the stuff and like why it makes me think and act and believe certain things, you know? Sure.
100%. I mean, I feel like the pandemic has really put a lot of perspective for people to just kind of take pause. I mean, the whole world is on pause, right? Yeah. The universe said, everybody is getting checked. You need to all stop. You need to all just pause, step back, and look at your life and what's going on. What's important and what's not important. I mean, one of the greatest news I've heard in 2020 among all the bullshit that's been going on is the Kardashians getting canceled. I'm like, thank God there is a God.
You
I'm
know?
Like, 2020.
I'm, up there.
I'm like, maybe 2020 is not that bad. I'm like, this is actually turning out to be.
Yeah, when Kourtney Kardashian is like, I don't want to do glam, you know that. There's a big reckoning, you know?
There's a massive reckoning going on. And listen, there's only so many ball players whose lives you can go and destroy. Like, there's only so many.
There's only so many.
They're like, we're running out of black men whose lives we can destroy. So let's just cancel the show. Your story is so, it's so painful, but also just so inspiring of what you've done with it. Because I feel like so many people, Danielle, who would have experienced, you know, had their, you know, lost their legs in such a traumatic experience, would just basically just shut down, would be just be like, you know what, I'm not doing anything. Life has no purpose. Who cares? God did this to me. Did you go through this did you go through some time of like asking yourself, why me? Why did this happen to me?
No, I mean, I don't know. I just don't, when you say like so many people, if they experience that, they would be in a place of like shutting down and not doing anything. I just don't believe that's true. I don't know, because so many of the people I surround myself with, like everyone I know is pretty much like a comedian or someone who like works in like entertainment. And it's like, we've all been through some shit. Like there is a reason we need to stand in front of strangers and make them laugh, you know?
Yeah.
So whether it's physical or not, we've gone through some shit. And like, I just, everyone I know is a survivor, you know, in some way, shape or form. Like everyone is choosing every day to live their life the way they want to. And some days are better than others, you know, and that's just the way it is. But I think that just showing up is okay, is enough. And like every day you're not, it's not going to be great, but I just, you know.
I feel like showing up is in life is most of the battle. Anything else is just like icing on the cake. Like showing up is such a big part of life, you know. You're right. I mean, look, if you're a comic, you know, especially comics, like we already come from so much pain and trauma as it is, right? So, which is why we get into comedy to, you know, use it as a way to kind of regulate these traumas. So, you know, for me, I chose comedy because I had a choice between killing myself and choosing comedy. So I chose comedy. Good choice. So hopefully I'll do all right in it. If not, then, you know, I don't know. Then I don't know what I'm going to do. But I feel like, do you think that you've been doing comedy for how long, Anil?
6 years.
6 years. Okay. And what was the initial, what were you doing? So after you get out of the hospital, you're wheelchair bound and you're just like, what am I going to do? Are you still in college at that time or you're done with college by then?
I went to Pasadena City College for a few years. Of course I went, took way more classes than I needed for a certificate or an associate's degree. Did I get one? No, I didn't. I did do study abroad. Fun fact for any of you out there, if you want to travel abroad, probably not during coronavirus, but you can do that through your local community college.
Really?
I studied abroad in Italy through Pasadena City College. So it was really cool.
Was it a scholarship?
No, you just like pay. It was like $8,000, which isn't a little bit of money, but
yeah,
it's still very cheap compared to like a regular 4-year university.
Wow. And yeah. Were you going there for accounting and for math also?
I was just taking general ed courses and like anything that seemed interesting or fun to me. Well, you know, get like Shakespeare when I want. just whatevs.
So you're going to school and you're after a while, you're like, you know what? This is bullshit. I don't want any of this stuff.
Yeah. I basically just kind of stopped. I was like, I don't really want to take classes anymore. And then I had like just really random jobs. I was a receptionist at a beauty salon for a little bit. Yeah. And then I actually did work accounting. I worked accounts receivable at a water filtration and parts supplier in Glendale. The Chester Paul Company. Shout out to them.
Paid the bills, Danielle. Paid the bills.
It paid the bills, but it was like a very, very 9-to-5. It was like, and I kind of just thought to myself, I was like, maybe I'm just one of those people that has like a really boring day job, like a mind-numbingly boring day job, and my life is really full with other things outside of it. Because, like, you know, it was like going out with my friends and, like, you know, going to museums and dance parties and traveling and this and that. But then, like, Madison, my best friend Madison, she'd moved back from London because she had done theater school in London. And so now she was in LA and she was like trying to do like Shakespearean theater in LA, which why you would, I don't know. I know, doesn't, I'm like, again, the choices we make in our youth. but her roommate was a stand-up. And so we started going to his shows. And then by the third one, I was like, he's not funny. I'm funny. I can do this. I was like, Madison, how do we do stand-up comedy?
I love this. I love that so much. He wasn't funny. Does he still do comedy? Do you know?
He does. I'm sure he loves it when I say that.
Gotta give a shout out to the average male comic with their confidence.
Male comedians.
Gotta fucking love that level of confidence. We're like, oh my god, I gotta like be funnier. I gotta kill and I gotta do. And they're just like, I'm doing just fine with my turkey sandwich jokes. Okay, baby. Come on.
I'm doing just fine. They're like, I was just, you know, working something out. And it's like, when are you ever going to just, like, perform that?
Right. When are you ever going to kill? Like, have you ever thought about that? Like, maybe ever? Like, no, that's not a priority for you. All right, good job. So then you watch this unfunny guy, and then you're like, I want to be stand-up comedy. I want to be a stand-up comedian. And then Madison's like, I want to be stand-up comedian too. And then you venture out and start doing open mics and start writing comedy bits out.
Yeah. She's like, okay, so we go to open mics. I'm like, okay. And like, I thought the first open mic that we went to, we were just going to watch. I was like, she like looked up the Comedy Bureau and she found this open mic. You remember Rock Paper in Hollywood? It was like across the street from Meltdown. They had like a Saturday open mic that like.
I don't remember. Yeah, this is what, early 2000s?
This is like 20. I started in like August
2014. I remember Rock Paper.
Yeah, she's like, we're gonna go there, and I was like, okay. And she's like, we're so brave, and I was like, why are we brave? Because we're gonna watch people like speak into a microphone. She's like, no, we're gonna speak into the microphone. I'm like, what?
I love that.
It was so much fun. Yeah, like she went up first. She signed her name on the list first because I was so nervous. And she went up, and then I went up, and like people laughed, and I was like, whatever this is, I need it all the time. You know, it just was like everything made sense.
Yeah, it just clears up. You're just like, oh my God, I think this is it for me. When you did your first open mic, how many minutes was it? And how did you feel? Like you are, you know, I mean, look, you're wheelchair bound. You go up, you know, you get up there and you start telling jokes and people are looking at you. You're like, oh my God, what, you know, what are they expecting of me? You're nervous. Like, tell me what's going through your mind.
I think I was just more nervous about like, if I was going to be funny, because like ever since the accident, like I lost my legs when I was 20. I started comedy when I was 30. So that's like 10 years of existing in the world as a physically disabled woman. You know, like the first time I really went out in public after my accident, like with my dad, we went to get lunch. I could feel everyone looking and staring at me. I could feel all of that, like, what's going on? Oh, you know, all the questions and everything like that. And I really just had to make a choice in order for like me to survive. I'm like, I can't see that. I can't take that on. I have to block that out. I can't carry that. So I for sure had to live in like a very heavy state of denial to just like get on with my day, you know, and like not take on people's questions and people's expectations, right? So like when I got on stage at this cafe for this open mic, I was just worried about, is what I'm saying funny? Do you guys relate to what I'm saying? Am I making you laugh? It was less about, what do you guys think about my wheelchair? And I think honestly, my experience like as a disabled woman has been really helpful for me with stand up, because there's that level where I am not, the confidence and the stage fright isn't there. I'm less concerned about what you guys are seeing and more about what are you guys hearing, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's more about like my performance. Like, of course, you know, I still get nervous and jittery, and especially when I'm first starting out, because it's like I'm learning a new skill.
Sure.
It was very much about what am I saying and doing, and less about existing in front of people, if that makes sense.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And also, I think, you know, big kudos to you, where you're not thinking in terms of using, you know, the wheelchair as like a crutch to constantly come back to it. You're just like, no, I actually have something funny to say, you know, and I want you to pay attention to the content that's coming out of my mouth and don't look at what, you know, where I'm at. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, totally. I mean, oh my God, the first time I did an open mic at the Ice House, you know, I'd gone up, and the way the room, you know, that B room on the side, it gets packed, and there was just no way for me to get on stage. So I just like stayed at the table I was sitting at. They passed me the mic. I just kind of looked around at the room. Like, I guess I just hang out in the audience and do my jokes.
Yeah.
But then this guy went up after me, and he like, you get 3 minutes at the Ice House mic. It's a very short mic, 3 minutes. Somehow this man ran out of things to say because he was bombing. He looked at me, pointed, and he's like, well, you didn't even talk about your thing. And it was just like, excuse me? Like, fuck you. I don't deserve, I don't, like, I don't oh, you or anyone in this room, any explanation for like my existence, for me being here. I told the jokes. I wanted to work out. You have no idea. You've never met me before. You don't know what I have jokes about, what I don't have jokes about. Precisely. I'm here to do work, which is a lot more than what you're doing.
Precisely.
You can't even fill 3 minutes without pointing at me. Like, it was just so insane.
What a douchebag.
So mad. Yeah.
What a fucking douchebag. I hope he quit comedy. Did he quit comedy?
I mean, I don't know. I haven't seen him around. Like, I can't remember his name.
Well, first of all, fuck that guy. Second, you know, look, Danielle, you know what it is? With us, it's either one thing or the other, right? We're women of color. Then you add that, you know, a physical challenge part of it. And people always, especially male comics, always find a way to try to pick something out about you. I remember I was doing a show and I was about to go on stage, and the host, the male host, was like, oh, the next comic I'm about to bring up on stage, you know, her jeans is really tight. That's how he introduced me to come on stage. And I got on stage and I was like, what the fuck kind of intro was that? You know, I was just like, my goodness. I was like, this jeans is tight, but you ain't never going to be able to get your hands on this booty, baby. So you just keep staring, bitch. Like, what? You know, yeah. I'm always fucking fascinated by this shit. Now, fuck those guys. But seriously, I feel like even with all these adversities, even with all these challenges, you've been freaking killing it, man. You're like out there, you're doing all these amazing things. I'm so proud of you. Like, one of the things I was reading about you, you did A Little Late with Lily Singh. You know, that's on NBC. Tell me a little bit more about that. Was that somebody saw your tape? Was this through like an agent or something? And they were like, oh my God, we love Danielle, bring her on.
Oh my God. I didn't do stand up on A Little Late with Lily Singh. I was in one of the sketches. But, the woman who does casting, she like had found me on Instagram and she like reached out to me, and it was a really cute segment. It was around Christmas. And you know how there's like that Victoria's Secret fashion show that they do every year with like the bras and all of that? Yeah. And this was like the year, this was this like winter, and like they had canceled it basically. That's
right, because of Fenty.
Mm-hmm. And so they did like, you know, what if the Victoria's Secret fashion show was real? So it showed like just kind of real women with real bodies and like different kind of home for the holidays look. So I was like in like a very cute, just like flannel Christmas set, you know, just like I'm for staying on the couch and not getting up until like mom tells me dinner's ready. like a runway. It was just like really cute and it was really fun. And they, yeah, it was like a really great mix of like women of color, fat women, thin women, trans women. It was really, really cute.
Love it. That is so wonderful. And now you also recently did you were in CBS's 2020 Diversity Sketch Comedy. Do you get to write the sketch and then perform in it? Is that how it goes?
Yeah, for the showcase, they really want the performers to contribute and write. So I co-wrote two sketches. I co-wrote the sketch I starred in and another sketch called The Devil Wears Marshalls. That one was really fun. But
The Devil Wears Marshalls. I love
The Devil Wears Marshalls. It was really fun.
Can people watch this?
No, unfortunately, you can't watch. I know. I really wish they would like put it on like CBS or something, but they do it over, there's six performances total. So they do it over like a week at the El Portal Theater. Hopefully, I mean, I don't know when the next time we'll be able to gather and like what's going to happen for the 2021 showcase, but being able to perform in a theater, like a 500 seat theater, like, that was huge. I've not experienced that before. And to do sketch comedy, like, it was just a lot of firsts for me. Cause like, I'm a stand-up girl, you know, I stand up, I haven't taken improv.
Yes.
And that was really my first time kind of going there with sketch comedy. But everyone in the program was so talented and like encouraging. And it was a lot of fun.
That is so wonderful. When you transitioned into stand up and when you did open mics and stuff, when you went and did your first open mic, did you tell your mom or did you tell your parents that you were going to do it? Like, what was that?
I told my mom after the first day. So after Rock Paper, I was like, oh my God, this was so fun. Let's do another one. Let's do another one. So we went to the Lexington.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh, we're so early. We'll like be first on the list. We were early for the Lexington, at least an hour early for the Lexington, number 25 and 24 on the list. So, I mean, I went up and definitely bombed, but I still loved every moment of it. I like sent my mom the voice memos of my first two open mic sets. And she was like, I'm so proud of you. That's so great. She's like, Ellen says to send about their kids that are doing cool things. So I'm gonna send Ellen this. And I'm like, okay, mom. I'm like, I'm pretty sure Ellen doesn't care that I like did open mics.
Mom, that's so sweet. Your mom sounds really supportive.
Yeah, my mom is really supportive. I'm very thankful that she's very supportive.
She's not saying, hey, plumbers make more money than comedians. I think anybody makes more money than comedians. You know, everybody makes more money than the comedians. One of my brothers, I'm not even going to specify which one, we don't speak anymore, but he said to me when he found out that I wanted to be a performer, he was just like, you know, he's like, you know, performer, you know, if you want to become a performer, it's like being a prostitute. He's like, that means you just want to be a prostitute. And I was like, no, you don't understand. Prostitutes make way more money than comedians. And I was like, trust me, if I was a prostitute, I would make way more money than comedians do. We get fucking paid in drink tickets. Most of the time, we don't even get paid in the beginning anyways. You get paid in weed. That means you're slightly beginning to make it a little bit. Maybe somebody values what the fuck is coming out of your mouth. But prostitute, I was like, oh, man. I was like, prostitutes make way more money than
right? I wish I was making sex worker money, please.
I was like, I think you're insulting sex work by comparing it to comedy.
We'll do that to them, right? They got a lot against them. They don't need this.
Right? I was just like, no, they're doing just, you know how many free blowjobs I have given away in my life just hoping I was going to get some kind of love or attention out of these guys. I got nothing. I got fucking nothing to show for this shit. So there's that. Speaking of free blowjobs, Danielle, how is the dating life for you during the pandemic and even pre-pandemic?
Ooh, I mean, what dating life? Yeah. Dating in the pandemic, I'm not on the market. I mean, okay. True story. I actually dumped my first the therapist I had starting pandemic because she kept trying to get me to like go on Tinder and date. Oh. And I'm like, we're in a pandemic. It feels like you should be telling me not to do this.
Right.
What?
Like, was she saying to do like Zoom calls and stuff or like physically meet people?
She was saying she's like, a lot of my clients are doing it. I'm like, I mean, I don't know what's wrong with them, but they were like having Zoom dates or they were like going to like the same drive-through in their own cars, ordering their food, then sitting in a parking lot and then like looking at each other and like eating. I'm like, that's weird. Or she's like, or, you know, very like Romeo and Juliet where they can like stand outside your like window or balcony. I was like, I don't need some psycho knowing where I live.
No, fuck no. You don't want that.
No, thank you.
What is he going to do? Bring his own stool while he sits outside and talks to you? Like what?
Here's the deal. I put on makeup for this because I love and respect you and your show.
Danielle, I love you too.
I don't want to do this for a stranger on a Zoom call. Are you kidding me? No, I don't think so. Absolutely not. No, I'm not wearing pants. Like, I don't.
Anybody's wearing pants nowadays, Danielle. I think it's the no pants existence is what the pandemic has given us, you know. Right?
Like I am like, I haven't worn a bra in months.
It's the greatest.
I'm not, you can't get me to be out for a man on the chance that he might like me.
Listen, in the 30s, the titties are beginning to fall down to the ground anyways. And the pandemic has just kind of accelerated that process.
Yeah, we're there already.
So broad, just let the titties fly, baby. Let them fly. Let them just do their thing, you know? I mean, dating in Los Angeles, you know, I do this joke on stage that dating in Los Angeles is like going through the clearance section at the 99 cent store. Yeah. You know, it's like just the bottom of the fucking barrel anyway, you know. Have you ever had like male stand-up comics like trying to be like, hey, baby?
Unfortunately, well, no, I did have a hardcore creeper when I first started. I have like, you know, dated, hooked up with male comedians. That usually ends poorly for me. I'm usually the one that ends up a little teary-eyed with that.
Oh, no. they've never dropped a tear for you or two? A tear or two?
No. I mean, I don't know. I do honestly think like another comedian, here's what I think honestly an ideal relationship for me would be. Another stand-up comedian in another city, because then I can visit them, they can visit me, I can do comedy in their city, they can do comedy in my city. I don't have to see them all the time, but, you know, it's like still fun and exciting. Who's not emotionally available, you know?
Welcome to the club, sis. Welcome to the club. Wait, I don't understand. Why date a stand-up comic? Why not just like an engineer or like a businessman or some dude who works in a tech company?
And this is like what I found the last time I was like seriously trying to do online dating is because of the schedules. Like they get off of work, what, 5, 6 o'clock. They want to meet for dinner, drinks at like 7, 8, maybe 9. That's when I'm out doing shows. So am I going to like not do a spot to get to know a stranger?
Maybe in the beginning it's, you know, they can like meet you after a show and you can go for drinks or dinner or something.
That's really late for them because then we're getting into like maybe 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, midnight. And if they got to be up early, if they're like, you know, have a real normie job.
Yeah.
And then I don't want to spend, my weekends are like valuable. That's like friend time and family time. It's just very limited hours.
You're like, what I'm trying to say is that love has really got to, you know, it's just like kind of in the back burner. It's like somewhere number 20 on the list somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, I would like to be in a relationship, but honestly, this pandemic is, I've got a lot of work to do on myself and like with my mental health and like loving myself enough before I can really like love someone else. So it'll happen all in good time.
Agreed.
Not worried about it.
I agree. Do you have this, you know, coming from like, you know, immigrant parents and stuff like that, do you have this thing where you're very hard on yourself and you kind of have to learn to take it easy on yourself?
Yeah, like, okay, I am so hard on myself. It's always just, my roommate, she like planned like a little getaway for us. We went to Palm Springs. So we were like, let's be in a different box, you know, for a few days. So we were just in Palm Springs and she did, you know, those like paint and sip classes where you go to like a painting studio and they give you all the colors and the canvas and you just follow the directions. So they did like a at-home kit where they give you a virtual link so you can watch the instructor and do it at home. Yeah. So we all did that together. And like this whole painting class, I'm just like stressed out. Like this is supposed to be fun, right? You're painting and drinking wine. I'm like losing my mind. I'm like, they said 2 big scoops. Is this big enough? I don't know. Is this the right color? Am I stroking it? Like, you know, just losing my mind over everything when it's painting and it's subjective and it's like, supposed to be relaxing and fun, but I'm just like so hard. I'm just like, this is awful. This sucks. It's bad. You're so bad at this.
Oh my goodness. Is that, wait, would you say that you have like a type A personality?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's some kind of type A, some kind of like aggressive perfectionist, because the things that I care about, I really care about.
Yeah.
And then the things that I don't.
Never in a million years will you make me do that shit. Like, I'm just never going to do it. I'm the same way, you know. I'm the same way. Like, I go through these, whenever I am going through, like, these depressive moments where I'm just, like, in an emotional rut, and I'm like, ugh. The one thing that I love to do is to organize. So I'll, like, reorganize my kitchen, or like reorganize my closet, or like reorganize my bathroom. And it's interesting. It gives me like this weird sense of control where I'm just like, oh, I can organize this. And it also helps me clear my mind, because as I'm doing things, it's also I'm working out answers and giving myself answers. Is that something kind of what you do? Like, what? How do you deal with stress? How do you deal with depression?
That's a real positive way to like work through your stress. I am like, how do I work through my stress now? I think now because I've been in like learning about CBT, like cognitive behavioral therapy. Yeah. So a lot of that is kind of like objective truths versus like subjective like feelings, right? So like, what's the reality versus like what you're feeling? Like you feel like this is so. Yeah. It's like, it's never going to end and it's overwhelming and it's the end of the world and everything's hopeless and all of that. But it's like, well, what is the reality, right? Like focus on the facts outside of yourself, right? And like kind of really just getting to a place where you can believe like this will pass. It's going to be okay. If you need to do a breathe, I like a breathing exercise. I love a breathing exercise.
Breathing exercise, yeah. Breathing exercises are really good, very calming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have like the Calm app, so I just like breathe in and out with like the little graphic. But then there's also the one where you like, you know, like what name five things you can see, name like things you can smell, things you can hear, things you can touch. You know what I mean? So it just kind of like centers you in your body,
okay. So
you're like, you know, on high alert. You know,
yeah. Yeah.
But I for sure know. I love a Google Doc. I love a spreadsheet. When I would get stressed before, I would just start making booking requests and then like auto send them for like a normal time. Cause uh-huh. I'd be like stressed at 3 a.m. and it's like, what kind of, I'm not going to send a booking request like a psychopath at 3 a.m. So I'll like have it auto send to 9 a.m. the next
day. What? Now you think that you are you saying that is abnormal to do that? What are you talking about?
I'm like responding to correspondence that I'm like, should have responded to. And it's like, let me send these out, auto send it at like regular business hours.
Dude, I am so guilty of that. I bet some people read my message. They're like, what the fuck kind of psychopath is this bitch? Is at like 4 a.m. Like, bitch, what are you doing 4 a.m?
If you're living every mistake we've ever made, you know.
Exactly. I'm just so, you know, when I used to work in finance when I was in New York, when I grew up in New York, I used to work on the trading floor. I was one of the only 4 women that worked on the trading floor, and it was like a very, very high stress job. And I would literally wake up in the middle of the night and like panicking, like, oh my god, did I do it? So I just was like going through like my laptop, like 4 a.m. and be like, oh, did I do that? Did I send the messages? And I think that has like left this weird conditioning in me where I still have those kind of bouts of like panic. I'm like, did I send that? And I'm like learning to learn to breathe more. I'm learning to like center myself more. Is that, I mean, for you, do you, you know, are you someone who's like, you know, I'll go take a trip around the block or something just to get some fresh air or something?
Well, I mean, now that there's toxic ash outside, sure. I'm staying inside. Well, I'll be real, I don't like to move. Like, I don't want to go for a walk. I don't want to go for a roll. Yeah. I don't want to go for a stroll. But I will like sit outside. Like I got patio furniture like in the front of my house. So I've been having like social distance kind of hangs, like, you know, one-on-one, like, you know, come sit in the shade. And so just because I realized it's like I can't just be doing like Zooms and FaceTimes. Like I was getting really, I'm a social person. I'm an extrovert. I need that physical engagement with people. And so I'll just like just even sitting outside, even if I'm just like on my phone and scrolling, just like being outside does help.
Yeah, that's awesome. I have learned throughout the pandemic that I am an extroverted introvert. Like, mm-hmm. I like these interactions. But I love being alone. Like, I love my me time. Oh, God, I love it so much. I feel like you'll never see me hanging out in groups. You just won't see it. I am the last person on
a one-on-one exclusive. That's one-on-one. It.
The maximum I can take is maybe three people at a time. If it's fourth person, I'm out. I'm out. It's too much. It's too much. My brain is going in overload. I can't keep up with all these people. I can't do it. Have you always been an extrovert, or do you feel like have you always been an extrovert?
I think so. I think, you know what though? I definitely, I don't think I'm like the extrovert I thought I was when I was younger. I think a lot of it was me, like, cause I was a loser in high school. I was like a loser in middle school. I was a loser in high school. I was made fun of all the time.
What does that mean, Danielle? What does that mean?
Very uncool, very unpopular. So I think there is like a big part of me that in like my 20s and 30s was like, you gotta go out, you gotta be seen. Like, you can drink, you can dance, you can do it all, you know? And so, that gets exhausting. Being on like that all the time gets exhausting.
Yeah.
And also because like I have comedy as a creative outlet and it's like, okay, I can be on doing that. So now I'm just more, I like to hang out with people and friends, but I like it to be quality time. So I would rather a one-on-one situation, a very small group.
Yes.
But not, yeah.
You're growing up, Danielle. That's what that means.
Is that what it means?
Yeah. You just go. Because you know what it is? You can't deal with people's bullshit anymore. You're like the limited, like cut the fat, cut the crap. Who are the good people? Who are the good people that I want around me? Who empower me? I empower them. We have in-depth conversation. We're not having some shallow bullshit-ass conversation. We're having like good, you know, like this is like, it's good for your soul. That's how you know. Like you're maturing. You're just like, okay, I am definitely maturing. This is what happened. Cause you really cut the fat out, you know? I don't know. So what have you been doing during, like, have you been doing a lot of Zoom shows during the pandemic? What have you been up to?
Doing Zoom shows for sure. I'll do any Zoom show that anyone asks me to do. I love a Zoom show. I mean, mostly Zoom shows, trying to write more, I'm kind of working on some pilots, so trying to crack down on that. I shot some sketches with my roommates. That was pretty fun.
Got it. Is Madison one of your roommates?
I'm sorry?
Is Madison, your best friend, one of your roommates?
No, she doesn't. She lives on the west side. She lives far away.
Oh, where do you live?
I'm in Glassell Park, by Hemlock and Highland Park. Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very hipsterish. A lot of writers live around there. A lot of writers live around Echo Park, Glassell Park.
I grew up in this area. I grew up in Mount Washington and Eagle Rock and Highland Park. So I've seen it change. Yeah.
You've seen a lot of skinny white dudes moving.
Definitely. Yeah.
Beards and skateboards. That's what you've seen. And skinny jeans.
That's the bar over their shoulder. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. What do you think is what do you think is going to happen to stand up comedy? Do you think stand up comedy is going to be changed forever, Danielle?
I mean, I don't have a crystal ball, but I don't think it's really going to come back in like a real way that I can like participate in it regularly.
Yeah,
until 2022, I'm going to be perfectly honest. I mean, just the way that like our government is handling it.
Sure.
I mean, it's just I can't imagine. Especially the level that I'm at, right? Like, I'm not like a headlining comedian. I'm not like a major name. Like, the odds of me, like, you know, I'm able to start auditioning again, right? So, like, I'm doing self-tapes. I can write. It's kind of like I've had to really just make peace with the fact that I love stand-up comedy and I will get to do it again when I get to do it.
Yeah.
But right now I have to, like, use this time, use it as the gift that it is, as much as like I hate it, but like write the pilots, right? Instead of like before, because I was always doing stand-up, it's like, I'm too busy. It's like, bitch, you got nothing but time. So write that shit, sell a show, audition. Like now I have time to devote to these other aspects of like entertainment that comedy has like allowed me to like participate in. So it's like, let me do that. And like, I will I love stand up. Like, that's never going to go away. But I also can't like force something to happen that like is out of my control.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I agree with you. Have you headlined a show thus far, Daniel?
I mean, I've headlined, but I'm not like, it's not, you know, there's a difference between like Whitney Cummings headlining and like me. Like, I don't have a special. I haven't done late night. Like, but so like this year, a big like, and this is like part of what's like frustrating about this year and stuff and like the plans you make. But like, I was really trying to open for like bigger comedians this year and like have that be a big part of like what I was doing to really kind of get like a really strong half hour to like, yeah, potentially try to like get a Comedy Central have a, I don't know. Yeah, who knows?
Well, listen, I get it. 2020 has crushed a lot of dreams. It has crushed a lot of dreams. My show Minority Reports that you've been on, and this is the podcast. One of the greatest things that has happened for me with the Minority Reports is that I've really launched into the podcast and the digital series of it that has been doing really well. But you've done some of the Minority Report shows. Our show was going to be the official comedy show for LA Pride this year.
Oh, man.
God. We were going to be, I mean, Minority Reports had like so much amazing stuff lined up. We had the first cannabis cafe that is in West Hollywood. We were going to be one of their official comedy shows. Like,
wow.
That's gone. Like, all of this stuff just kind of disappeared. But I honestly feel like things happen for a reason. I'm a person of faith. I really believe that things, you know, they happen for a reason. You just have to, everybody has to think outside the box right now, right? It's not like, oh, poor me. It's like people are in way worse situation than I am. This is not a poor me conversation. This is just of like, you know, a lot of shit has just shifted. Like, and you just have to fucking figure it out. How the hell you're going to do it? Listen, my ass has gotten so fat during the pandemic. Like, I can't even twerk on the gram to pay the bills. You know what I'm saying? Like,
girl, people like it extra thick. Okay. They're like triple thick.
Somebody might be in this.
Get on TikTok.
Somebody might be into this halal fat ass. Who knows, you know, just like twerking the gram with like a hijab on, and who the fuck knows. I know Mia Khalifa has destroyed that for the rest of us. Even blowjobs and fucking hijab, that shit is like just
have you seen Rami? Have you seen season 2 of Rami?
I have, yeah. Fucking cousin fucking for fucking your first cousin.
Oh, I mean,
it's so crazy, you know, because Rami's been on Minority Reports. He headlined Minority Reports. I just did a show with Rami last year. I did a podcast with Rami. And it's crazy because when I watch the show, there are so many people on there that are people I know that I've been friends with for years. And I'm like, oh, my God, what? So-and-so is on that show. And so-and-so. It's so crazy. What do you think of Rami?
I love it. I love it so much. It like season two, I mean, I love season one. Season two is so good. Season two is so funny. Yeah. I feel like season two is a lot funnier than season one. Like, the humor is very dark and very dry, but it's so funny. And I love that Rami is truly just like unapologetically him. You know what I mean? Like, he's not purporting to speak for all Muslims or all Arab Muslims. He's just like, this is me. I'm a millennial kid. Yes. I grew up this way. I'm going to show you this like one family, this one slice of life. And it's like, so, and like just knowing him because like doing stand up and like being on shows with him, and it's just like, Robbie, you know what I mean? Just the way his mind like works and the crazy things, ideas he has. It's like, oh my goodness. You're wild.
I feel like Rami has definitely, brought forth like a lot of conversations that, honestly, like as a Muslim female comic, like I would not be able to get away with stuff that he does. Like as a guy, he's able to get away with way more shit than I. If I was to come up with a show called Mona, where I'm out there like banging a married man and doing all that stuff, there's no fucking way that show. Like, but you know, with the guys, as you know, and this is a global thing, it's just that it's just becomes a lot more acceptable, especially if you're a Muslim woman. It's just like there are just so many fucking barriers that they put on. You're like, you can't say this and you can't talk that and you can't fuck this and you can't touch that. And it's just like, come on, man, fuck off. Like, the dudes get to do it. Why can't we, you know? But overall, I think what Robbie's done is fucking fantastic, and I think it's a fucking hilarious ass show. We're gonna start wrapping up, Danielle. So where can we follow you? Do you have any shows coming up?
Follow me at Diva Deluxe on Instagram and Twitter. I put my shows in my bio on all my social media, and I have a podcast coming out in October with Madison. Mm-hmm. It's called Wow Rude Podcast, and you can follow us at Wow Rude Pod. Yeah, on all the
social. Wow Rude?
Wow, like W-O-W.
And rude, like rude.
R-U-D-E, like don't be rude.
Rude, like is that rude? Rude. And it's going to be on what? Wow. Is it just Wow Rude Podcast?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so you can subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. And we're going to start releasing episodes in October.
I love it. I love it. Are you guys interviewing mostly comics?
It's just going to be us two for now, but we might have some interviews a little later on.
And what is the podcast about?
Just like topical jokes, different segments. We have kind of different games we play. We have like one segment that's really fun that I'm excited about, news from Caucasia. So just like updates on white culture. We have a section called cunt commentary, which is like a monologue joke back and forth. Yeah.
That's awesome. I can't wait to hear cunt commentary.
Pop culture, gossip, internet bullshit. Yeah.
I really hope Ivanka Trump is part of that conversation. She is the mega cunt that is just out there right now. She is
Robo cunt, really.
She is daddy 2.0, like that bitch. Yeah. She is just out of control. Danielle, this was such a freaking great conversation, man. Thank you so much for coming on such a short notice. This was fantastic.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, this was great.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, my friend. I will talk to you soon. Thank you so much for coming.
All right. Take care.
All right, thank you, too. Bye. Bye. That was a wonderful and amazing Danielle Perez. I hope you guys enjoyed that. I'm really looking forward to her podcast. Wow, rude. I love that. I love that whole idea. But if you guys haven't subscribed to my YouTube channel, please do. I have a lot of exclusive interviews on the Minority Reports podcast and digital series. I have a lot of my stand-up is there. I have some new stand-up that I'm going to be putting out, so you guys can watch that. Guys, stay safe out there. Have a great weekend. Don't inhale the horrible air. Have a good night.